This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson. Johnson's theme was technology that is coming to the Chicago Police Department is making crime more predictable and preventable. The goal, he said, in areas like Englewood and the West Side areas where we've had high numbers of shootings and high crime, is less shootings will mean more graduates of high school and college, and less homicides will result in more jobs in high crime areas. Chicago Police Department, he says, will become even more proactive than it is rather than reactive. Under his watch, he said, we're instituting technology to help fight crime, to make us much more smarter, both for new and veteran officers. He talked about the introduction of new gunshot detection systems, more cameras throughout Chicago to reveal street happenings, software that predicts where crime will occur in real time. 12 of the 24 Chicago police districts currently have strategic decision support centers. By the end of 2018, all 24 police districts will have these strategic defense centers. The police department this year so far has confiscated 2,100 illegal guns. He said the projection is we'll pick up one illegal gun for every hour of the year. The Chicago Police Department, he said, is dependent on having good community relations. With that regard, all current officers will receive 40 hours of annual in-service training, emphasizing a revised use of force policy, a quicker response from Internal Affairs Division, a huge emphasis on crisis intervention training, including dealing with people that have mental health problems. For the first time in history of the police department, there will be a one-to-one ratio of recruits to field training officers. Finally, Superintendent Johnson addressed the issue of the academy, proposed fire and police academy in Garfield Park. He said this will be crucial for future crime success fighting because we will be able to have scenario-based instruction. He concluded by saying he hopes that today the Illinois Senate will override Governor Rauner's veto of the gun dealer licensing bill. He feels Chicago, in many, many ways, is a much safer place than it ever has been, but there is much more yet to be done.
Please welcome the mayor of all of Chicago, the most American of American cities, ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Mayor Emanuel.
Thank you, Jay. While we're here to talk about public safety, I do want to do a shout out, if I can, for our students and our teachers and our principals at CPS. With the new data, I think I have this right, our eighth graders, for the first time ever, lead the country average on reading gains. And so to Janice and the leadership, new data that's out on the national testing. This morning, I started the morning with the superintendent when we had, I think, the largest graduating class in recent memory. Think about how lucky you are because Eddie has to start every morning with my phone call at 7:15. So can you imagine waking up every morning to that? But the truth of the matter is we had a tremendous graduation class today, and it was a series of graduations about every month now. We were on our way to add an additional 1,000 officers. I say that by reference because the superintendent in his remarks made note of a number of things that I think is important, and he'll probably do it here. And the fact is that this graduating class of officers, while they're being trained by officers, every one of these officers are being trained to understand and use a body camera, not true by their teachers when they graduated. They are being trained to understand the difference between a mental health call and a 911 call on crime, not true by their trainers when they first graduated. They're being trained on de-escalation, not true for their trainees when they became officers, but true today. and you go through the series of reforms, it's probably one of the largest, most significant changes in the police and in their practice and their training and in technology than ever happened before. But it is also upon, just a week ago, or a little less than that, also Chicago took note of 13 consecutive months in reduction in gun violence in the city of Chicago. And while it's citywide, because I was just in Englewood yesterday, Englewood last year experienced a 44% drop in shootings, the lowest level of shootings in 15 years in Englewood. This year, on top of it, there is a 55% reduction. In the past, we all know this, if we're from Chicago, Englewood led the city, in shootings. Englewood today leads the city in shooting reductions. 67%. Now, I happen to think Commander Johnson in the 7th District, but also with the leadership, the investment in new resources, new technology, but most importantly under the superintendent, if it's predictable, it's preventable. And through proactive policing, professional training, we are seeing 13 consecutive months in not only drops in shootings and homicides, but a place where I believe we're not far from, in Englewood and other challenging neighborhoods in the city, we will not measure the progress based on shooting reduction, but by graduates. We will not measure the progress of Englewood by how many or how few homicides, but how many new jobs and new companies have opened up in the neighborhood. And it's not an accident when you look at the Whole Foods, the Chipotle, the Starbucks, the new 2FM facility that's going there, that you see a turnaround. I think Commander Johnson in the 7th District said it right when he had a gentleman, a longtime resident of Englewood, say to him, "I don't know what you guys are doing. I'm cleaning this up for you." Let me just say that right now. And that's very hard for me. It's very challenging. He says, "I don't know what you're doing here, but you keep doing it." I believe what's happening in Englewood and happening in other districts because of both the strategic centers, the additional better trained officers, the new technology, the idea of community policing, and what is happening in the with the officers and the relationship to the community. You are seeing across the city, everywhere we've put these technology with the training, the additional officers, and the new leadership, you are seeing an unprecedented drop in shootings and homicides in month after month. Nowhere near success, but also clearly indicating, I believe, a proactive rather than a reactive policing, and knowing that if you can predict it, you can prevent it. And I think it's telling for the philosophy that we've tried to put in place that Eddie's colleague, specifically Janice from schools, is here. Because in the end of the day, public safety is not just about policing. We have the last month, we hit 7,500 young men in mentoring programs, hitting our goal in 8th grade, 9th grade, and 10th grade. Every young man in our 20 challenging neighborhoods will have a mentor 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, so they can make good decisions. The largest after-school and summer job enrollment in the history of the city. And every officer and every commander will tell you a young man or woman involved in an after-school or a summer job is a young man or a young woman going to make a better choice in their future. The superintendent is leading the department at its most challenging time. He is proud of Chicago, and I can say this with confidence being all over the city. Chicago is proud of Eddie. And he has took on and created a leadership team, but he's also doing it in a way that we are being both the most professional and the most proactive department, showing that those can be complementary rather than contradictory. Please give a warm welcome to a superintendent who I think is showing the way forward for the city of Chicago.
Thank you, Mayor Emanuel, for that introduction. And thank you for everything that you do to improve the lives of every Chicagoan. Good afternoon, and thank you all for having me back at City Club. I'd like to thank many of our business and community leaders for joining us today, including members of the Chicago Police Board and City Club President Jay Doherty. Thank you. Since I've been superintendent, there have been several important public safety discussions that began right here in this room, and I'm glad to be here again to speak to you about the progress that the Chicago Police Department has made as an organization and where we're heading to move forward. But before I begin, I'd like to thank the City Club for recognizing the sacrifice that first responders make every day in the name of public service, including Commander Paul Bauer, who lost his life this past February. It's important for us as leaders to do everything we can to make sure that their lives are not lost in vain by giving our communities the support they deserve and giving our police officers the tools they need to do their jobs safer. Throughout today's discussion, I ask each of you to remember the sacrifice and the dedication Chicago police officers have made to achieve this progress. Toward the end of 2016, after experiencing a tragic level of gun violence in some of our neighborhoods, I, along with the rest of the CPD command leadership team, knew that as a city, we just couldn't repeat the same thing in 2017. We met with Mayor Emanuel and told him what we needed, just simply in plain terms. We needed more technology to help leverage the data we already had, and those was to fight crime smarter. We needed more police officers to do it, and we needed to train them better than we had in the past to make sure they're executing our new strategy each and every day. Without hesitation, the mayor agreed to give us these resources because he's always been willing to do whatever it took to make this city better and a safer place for everyone that lives in it. And I'd like to thank the mayor again for his unwavering support of myself and of CPD. So in early 2017, in two of our most historically violent districts in the city, Inglewood on the south side and Harrison on the west side, we started our technology investments. This meant installing district-wide gunshot detection systems and increasing the number of pod cameras, which gave us, quite frankly, more eyes on the street. It meant bringing all this data under one roof so that officers are reviewing a bird's-eye view of the streets that's paired with mapping technology that shows you the location of every shot that's fired in the city. Even as all that data is up on the big screens, the information is also being fed into specially designed software that takes into account historical calls for service, crime incidents, and known gang conflicts. That software actually predicts where shootings are likely to occur. And in each of those districts, CPD intelligence officers, along with district commanders and civilian crime analysts from the University of Chicago, sent that data in real time to the officers in the field using department-issued smartphones. That means that they knew where a shooting happened, where a car was speeding down a street, and where a suspect was running. That's the real-time data that officers were getting and are getting today. We call these district-based systems Strategic Decision Support Centers, or SDSCs. If that sounds high-tech to you, trust me, it is. When I became a beat cop in 1988, we patrolled the streets based off of a mix of the intelligence that we had, human intelligence, and a good amount of relying on our own intuition. Now, you fast forward to 2017, officers in the field were receiving real-time data from analytics in the SDSCs on their own smartphones, and because of the gunshot detection systems, they knew exactly where a shooting occurred as opposed to searching for a crime scene. And now, district commanders are setting up deployments based upon hard data. It completely changed the way CPD and we saw almost immediate results from this technology. By the end of 2017, the first full month of the SDSC implementation in those two districts, Inglewood saw a 50% reduction in shootings for the month, and Harrison saw nearly a 40% reduction. Now, building upon that early success, we expanded the technology to four more districts in 2017, Gresham, Ogden, Austin, and Deering. By the end of last year, through our data-driven strategy and the efforts of our police officers, Chicago saw an over 20% reduction in gun violence compared to 2016. And this year, we expanded the technology to an additional 6 districts so that now half of the entire city is covered by this technology. This year, Inglewood, as the mayor said, continues to see reductions in gun violence with 55% less shootings so far this year. Mm-hmm. And then last year at this time, nearly saw 70% shootings from the same time in 2016. In 2017, they saw the lowest levels of gun violence since we've been keeping records on gun violence. And I just want you to take a minute to think about that. Since we started tracking gun violence, the Inglewood District saw the lowest levels of gun violence. Inglewood, one of the most historically violent neighborhoods in Chicago, have led our gun violence reductions last year, and so far this year, they're doing it the same thing. And while they've been one of the main success stories of our crime strategy for some time now, another one is emerging this year in the Grand Crossing District, and that's also on the south side. They received their SDSC at the beginning of this year. In 2016, they saw an over 30% increase in gun violence and made modest reductions last year in 2017. And then in January of this year, we launched a new technology in that district. Now, as we stand here today, Grand Crossing has seen a 53% less shootings year to date than they did in the same time of 2017. They're also seeing... Thank you. They're also seeing less gun violence than they did at the same time in 2016 and 2015. We're now up to 12 of our police districts using this strategy of pairing the best technology, and with the hard work of our officers and intelligence operations, it's a potent combination that is clearly working. All 12 districts with this technology are averaging gun violence reductions around 30% compared to last year and 32% compared to the year 2016. And while those statistics are progress in the right direction, on the ground in these communities, we're beginning to see huge signs of hope and optimism that replace the fear and the sounds of gun violence. But that progress isn't just in those communities alone. I'm also proud to say that citywide, we've seen gun violence reductions for the 13th consecutive month. As of today, we've had 25% less shootings and murders than in 2018 than we had at the same point last year, and overall crime complaints across the city are down 14%. And Chicago police officers continue to recover nearly one illegal firearm for every hour of the year, with nearly 2,100 illegal guns off the streets of Chicago so far in the year 2018. But that only tells one side of the story. At the same time we launched the SDSCs, CPD embarked on one of its most ambitious hiring campaigns in its history. With plans to grow the department by nearly 1,000 sworn members, it was one of the first conversations that I had with the mayor when I took over as police superintendent. I told him that we needed more officers, we needed more detectives, we needed more supervisors, and most of all, we needed to better train our police officers. And I'm grateful that he has supported us on every one of those points. By the end of this effort, not only will there be more police officers on the streets to prevent the violence, there'll also be more detectives to help close more cases, more field training officers to make sure every new officer learns how to do their job correctly, and more sergeants and lieutenants to provide greater mentorship and supervision to the officers on the street. Throughout this process, we've been placing an important focus on diversity to ensure the department better resembles the ethnic makeup of the city. The CPD's command staff is already the most diverse in CPD's history, and I'm really proud of that fact. Now, as we've been making significant headway in reducing violent crime and making CPD more diverse, we also knew that we had to make the department an agency that every Chicagoan can be proud of and call CPD their police department. Because I firmly believe, you all have heard me say this time and time again, CPD is only as strong as the faith and the trust that the community has in it. That's why in 2017, we launched our Next Steps to Reform framework that laid out our plans to achieve that goal by enacting a new community policing strategy, providing best-in-class training to our officers, launching a revised use of force policy, and providing greater levels of accountability to the communities that we serve. From that plan, we launched a new and reinvigorated community policing effort, adapting recommendations from my community policing advisory panel made up of police officers, community members, and national experts in community policing. We also revitalized our training because when police officers have the best training, best, most up-to-date training, they quite frankly do their jobs better. Part of that will be our in-service training program that will require all officers to take a 40 annual hours of training by the year 2021, including annual training on use of force concepts. We also launched a revised use of force policy that was the result of two public comment periods, the first ever in CPD's history, and the end result was a policy that centered around the sanctity of life and focuses on de-escalation tactics. We increased transparency by issuing body-worn cameras to all officers on regular beat patrol, the largest application of this kind in the United States of America. We did it ahead of schedule, and we did it because we know the body-worn cameras are important for our communities and for the officers who wear them. And we worked to improve the functionality of our Internal Affairs Bureau to shorten the length of investigations and better equip investigators with detective training and to help officers report any misconduct that they might witness. The Next Steps framework was crucial to guiding our efforts, but there's still much more work to be done to make CPD better and build the trust within the communities that we serve. So we're going to keep implementing reforms. This year, we'll ensure that every officer in the department receives force mitigation training. Force mitigation training is at the heart of our new use of force policy and emphasizes de-escalation techniques to make sure that we use the proper amount of force that is reasonably necessary to stop a threat. In the past, officers were taught to use one level of force above the force that was used by the assailant. De-escalation training allows us to look at those same situations differently and teaches us how to use space, time, and distance to neutralize a threat and reduce the intensity of a situation with the goal of creating a safer outcome, and that's for everyone. We'll formally announce our force review unit, where leadership, department leadership, will review all cases where force was used and determine how we can better improve our tactics, training, and identify any potential issues. We're also emphasizing our crisis intervention training program. This is at the core of how we manage service calls that involve individuals who are in mental health crisis. It will also help officers in the field both identify a person in crisis and respond with department members who are equipped to handle these particular situations and hopefully get proper treatment for the individual involved. We're investing in how we train our new officers. For the first time in as long as I can remember, we have a one-to-one ratio of new recruit per field training officer. Field training is some of the most important training our officers receive. Those are the officers that train them when they actually hit the field. It's our hands-on training program. In the past, new recruits have doubled and sometimes tripled up with one training officer, and that's just simply not acceptable to me, and it'll no longer be the case because we have to teach officers these precious skills in the most effective and focused fashion. We're also putting our revised community policing efforts into action. Late last year, I officially adopted the recommendations of my community policing advisory panel, part of which includes creating a new office of community policing that reports directly to the superintendent. As someone who lived in Cabrini Green, trust me, I know personally how important it is to build strong relationships with the communities that we protect and serve. This office is a priority to me, and we are currently in the process of fully staffing this office to make it easier for us to engage on a more meaningful level with the communities that we serve. We're also strengthening our district advisory councils and ensuring that true partnership between the district offices and the communities is front and center of our current strategy. And finally, by the end of the year, we'll pilot an early intervention system for police officers. This system which is being developed in partnership with our department members and the University of Chicago, will allow us to identify problematic behavior before a potential crisis occurs. By providing officers with additional supports that are good for them, the department, and most importantly, good for the community. This early detection and intervention will not only protect the emotional and physical health of our officers, it will also protect the community to ensure that officers are acting professionally in their capacity on the street. Now, while that might sound like a lot of major projects going on at one time, I can assure you that those are just some of the hundreds of projects that are occurring behind the scenes every day to make CPD a better organization. We are currently undergoing negotiations with the Illinois Attorney General on a consent decree that will help identify areas of positive change for CPD, as well as securing the necessary resources to help our officers get what they need to do their jobs effectively and safely. I encourage all of you, as well as every other Chicagoan, to attend the public meetings held by the Attorney General's office and have your voices heard as we move forward in this progress. We also need to ensure that our efforts to reinvigorate our training are supported with the new Police and Fire Training Academy in the West Garfield Park neighborhood. This new facility is crucial for us, as the Department of Justice outlined in their report on the need for additional training. It'll provide our first responders with scenario-based instruction that's a key best practice for making sure the police officers are ready to face any scenario with professionalism and safety for both themselves and the citizens of this city. These reforms will make us a better department, and they'll help in our crime fight, not hinder it. That's key because despite the progress we've made to reduce violence and promote real change within CPD, there's still much more work that remains to be done. Now, I'm a police officer at heart, and I really don't like to get into the political game. I really don't like that. But today, the state Senate is convening in Springfield, and they can help support the work of the police officers here in Chicago if they override the governor's veto of the gun dealer licensing bill. We need that support for our officers by keeping firearms out of the wrong hands of people that just should not have them. Every day, Chicago police officers run toward the danger to take illegal guns off the city streets. And while I'm proud of their brave work, as a society, we can do better to make sure there isn't a need for them to do it in the first place. That's why I'm calling on our state legislators to override the Governor Rauner's veto of the gun dealer licensing bill. It's just common sense. It's a common sense piece of legislation that was put together with over a decade of input from experts in the field, and it simply holds gun dealers to a set of standards, just like we do for hair salons, liquor stores, and businesses that sell tobacco. So why wouldn't we do the same thing for establishments that sell potential implements of destruction that devastate our communities? As leaders in our community, I'm asking all of you all here today to help us in this fight, just as you did when you helped us pass meaningful legislation for the repeat gun offender bill. As I said earlier, we've made a great deal of progress in the last 2 years, but Chicago is now a safer place. CPD is better, a more transparent agency, but our work is still far from over. We'll continue our efforts to reform the department and hold criminals accountable for their actions. But we need those in the community, in the private sector, and in government to help us complete the picture. Through our combined work, I'm hopeful that we'll be able to create a brighter, safer future for generations to come. Thank you all again for having me, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Johnson. Now, I say this every time the superintendent is here, but I was a civilian instructor at the academy in May of 1988 when he was a recruit. Did very well in the psych workshop that we developed. If I knew he'd become superintendent, he would have done extremely well. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. If you have any questions, and I'm sure that we have plenty of questions, just hold them up.
and our staff will come around. We'll try to answer as many of these as we possibly can. This is from the Reverend Harrison with Teamwork Englewood. The successful implementation of CAPS is one of the key reasons for the reduction of violence in Englewood. Are you continually pressing the mayor's office and the city council to increase funding for CAPS?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I tell you this, I can honestly say this to you all. Since I became superintendent, everything that I've asked the mayor to do to help make CPD better for you all, he's done. And CAPS is absolutely the cornerstone of our current philosophy in the CPD. So whatever it takes to make sure that CAPS continues on or community policing, we'll get it done. Because, you know, when you think about it, back in the 1990s, Chicago was a model city for the CAPS program around the country. And then we fell off. But the goal is to ensure that we become that national model again. And we're heading in that direction. So the funding issues regarding that, I don't see any issues with it.
Okay, thank you. This is from David Coleman, City Club member with Extricity Services. Is there a way that third-party private security vendors can assist Chicago patrol officers?
You know, one of my main philosophies is that CPD cannot do this alone. So we're in the process right now of, you must have been in my office under the desk or something listening to us, because we're in the process right now of, we're going to bring a lot of the major security companies in and just have a conversation with them to see how we can do just that.
Okay. This is one, you can't tell them everything, Superintendent, but this is from Elizabeth Barton with Hepler Broom LLC. How's the city of Chicago preparing for response to critical incidences such as mass shootings?
Okay, great question. So we know that, you know, the landscape, the global landscape has changed quite a bit in terms of terrorism and just lone wolf attacks that we've seen all around our country. So we partner with our federal partners, our state partners, and our local partners, as well as with the general at OEMC. And we tabletop, we do a lot of preparation regarding those types of incidents. And here's what you have to know. You will never be 100% secure in situations like that. But what you want to do is try to mitigate the devastation that's caused by that. So we meet all the time, quite frequently, to discuss those types of issues so we can be as best prepared for it as we can be.
Okay. So now we have a question directed at certain neighborhoods. This is from Bonnie Kruger Spurlock with Associated Publications, Inc., City Club member. We actually have two questions, but one person was kind of chicken and didn't put their name on. It's a good thing this other one did. Thank you, Bonnie. What more is being done in the Streeterville Gold Coast area to reduce crime? And tied into that, your statistics address South and West Side, but you seem to ignore the North Side.
Okay, well, quite frankly, here's the issue. The North Side typically, historically, doesn't have the amount of gun violence that we see on the South and West Sides. However, having said that, I would tell you this. We are putting more resources in terms of personnel in the North Side districts, including the downtown areas. We're also in the process of adding more cameras to those particular areas so that we'll just have another layer of security. So, you know, I would say this to anyone that lives on the North Side. Don't be dismayed. We are not ignoring you, and we are putting resources in place to attack certain issues in those areas.
Okay, thank you. This is from Charles Sackley with ATOS Public Safety. May have been under your desk also. Clearly, the use of more advanced technology has assisted CPD in reducing crime. What is Chicago/CPP doing for next generation 911? Word is, New York City is about to give a major award after 3 years of evaluation. Maybe you could shed light on some of this.
You know what? I try not to look at New York too much in terms of what they're doing. I can just kind of speak to CPD. But, you know, yeah, we are investing a lot of technology. But at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you all this. You can invest all the technology that you want to. That's not, that helps. It's a tool. It's a resource. But the real meat of it is what the people out there do. And we're seeing this success in these communities, not just because of CPD, but a lot of it is because of the relationships CPD has been able to bring back with the communities, the business owners, and the elected officials. This crime reduction is not just a police issue. It's a city issue. So it takes all of us together to invest in being determined to reduce this violence. And I want to thank you all for that, because these reductions, we would not be seeing this stuff unless everybody put their hand in the basket to help do it. And so, you know, while New York is seeing some reductions, they are, but we're not that far behind. And when you look at where we were in 2016 and look at us today, most people around this country didn't think we would be right here where we are today. And it's not success, so we're not spiking the ball, but it certainly is pointing the needle in the right direction.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. This is from Jonah Goldschmidt with Loyola University of Chicago. He didn't check being a member or not. Jonah, $50. You will become a member. You don't have to go through the 10-week, 400-hour training class, okay? This will be immediate, I promise you. Okay. What is your view of the so-called ACLU effect on the frequency of homicides in the city? Now we know why Jonah's not a member.
Yeah, that's a sensitive issue. So while I do believe that CPD should do a better job in the way we conduct our street stops, I do. I also believe, though, that we should be stopping the right people for the right reasons at the right time. And simply put, you know, when we get descriptions of possible offenders, if they meet a certain criteria, then those are the individuals we should be stopping. So the ACLU, that agreement did have an effect on us in terms of the amount of street stops that we had. It went down by 80% in a couple of months. But what I always pivot to is this. Although we saw our street stops reduce dramatically, we saw our gun arrests go up, and they've gone up ever since we signed that agreement. So what that tells me is that we have done a better job training our police officers and identifying the right people to stop for the right reasons at the right times. But I do think we have to recognize, we have to give these police officers the tools that they need to help keep the citizens of this city safe. So, you know, that's all I'll say about that.
Thank you, Superintendent. To be continued. Okay. This is from Nicole D'Alessandro. What additional support does the police department need from the business community to continue the positive results that you are achieving?
That's a great question. So listen, you know, I said before that it all of us have a vested interest in reducing this gun violence. So what we can always use from businesses around the city is simply this. Create job situations for some of these guys that are out there involved in this nefarious behavior. Because I can tell you all this with certain confidence. I've been a cop in Chicago for 30 years. The amount of people that really drive our violence in this city, we got 2.7 million people in this city. The guys that actually drive that violence, it's a small, very small subsection of this city. Those guys on the periphery, if they had a different method to provide resources for their families, they would do it. Because I'll tell you this, there is nothing like seeing a guy that's been out there in that behavior for years, get him his first job, and he can take that first paycheck home to his wife and family. That look on his face is priceless. So if you all want to help, create those jobs so those individuals, we can take them out of that life and make them productive citizens again.
Couple last questions. This is from Mike Bacino with T-Mobile. He may have been under the desk also. What technology initiatives are you most excited about? Why? Mike's going to then take this back to T-Mobile, and they're going to work on it.
Yeah, you do stay in my office up under that desk, don't you? So the technology that I'm most excited about is probably, if I had to pick one, I would say the ShotSpotter technology. And I'll tell you why. Because when I was a cop on the beat, we would get a 911 call, shots fired at, I don't know, 79th and Halsted. Somebody lived there. And they would often say, you know, I heard the shots come from the east side of my house. But with the echoes in an urban environment, it might actually came from the other side. So what would happen is we would go to the other side looking for something, and we wouldn't find anything. And so then we would just leave. The ShotSpotter technology puts us right there. It pinpoints it. Not only does it pinpoint it, on the screens that they're looking at in the SDSC rooms, it actually has dashes that'll track where that person is shooting. It'll track the direction of flight. It'll also tell us if there are multiple shooters. You can't beat that type of intel. And so I'm most excited about that because it gives those officers that are responding a better picture of what they're walking into. So, and this is the one other unintended benefit from it. So now, when we get those ShotSpotter alerts and the officer goes there, he'll find ballistics evidence that we can then tie to other shootings. But the great thing about it is that we know exactly whose yard it was fired in, backyard, porch area, whatever, and we can now knock on that door to make sure those people at that home and the homes next door to them are okay. And that's huge because the people that live in those communities, by us knocking on the door just to see if they're okay, it has created huge public relations benefits, and it's bringing the communities back together with the police. So if I had to pick one technology, that would be it.
Okay. Thank you. This is from City Club member Suzanne Malik McKenna. How is the department integrating empathy into the training program for the new and current officers?
Great question. So before we listen, when you have different ethnic groups coming into your police department, we send them to a part of the city that they have no knowledge about. And this doesn't just go for police officers. You think about yourself. When you go into a community and a culture that you just don't understand, your inclination is to resist it, fear it, because you don't know it. But now we recognize that. Law enforcement all over the country recognizes that, but most notably here in Chicago. So before, with our recruit classes, we would always send them to the Holocaust Museum to just give them a taste of what can happen if things go haywire and go the wrong direction. But now we've implemented a program where they go through overall cultural sensitivity, and we now send them to the DuSable Museum so they can see the African-American experience in Chicago and also see a lot of the positive things that African-Americans have contributed to this city to make it the great city that we live in now. So. So now, because we've established them going to the African-American Museum, quite naturally, the Latinos are asking, hey, can we find somewhere so we can go find out about that history? And I have to be honest, I totally agree with them. When you think about Chicago, it's a third Caucasian, third African-American, and a third Hispanic. They should learn about all those cultures. So we are moving forward with that, and we'll get it done.
And Superintendent, if you need any help getting into the Mexican American Museum, National Museum in Pilsen, or in the Puerto Rican Heritage Museum in Humboldt Park, Billy Ocasio and Carlos Tortolero are members. We could put the squeeze on them, yep. So we'll get you in there.
Okay, thank you. I'll take
Tremendous.
You up on that.
Okay, so one or two last questions. Could you tell us how the department works with, for example, the University of Chicago Police Department, Loyola? I believe we have the police chief of the University of Illinois at Chicago Police Department here. These are some of the largest police departments in the state of Illinois. How do you work with these other law enforcement agencies?
Okay, great question. So if you all didn't know this, the Chicago Police Department is the second largest police agency in this country, and actually in North America. We're almost at 13,000 members now, so that makes us a pretty large department. So in terms of partnering with our universities, the district commanders actually meet with those police chiefs quite frequently so that we can discuss best practices. If they have different issues going on their campuses, then that's where that's discussed. But I can tell you this. I've been superintendent almost 2 years now. And the relationship between CPD and our university campus police is great. I don't know how it was before, but I can tell you this, it hasn't been better. So we have a great relationship with those other entities because let's face it, that's still in the city of Chicago, and we still have a responsibility to ensure that those campus environments are as safe as we can keep them.
Thank you. One last question. We read a lot and we see on the media a lot about car hijackings in the city. And some of us don't understand. There's been some discussion about legislation that may be needed and whether the person who's driving the car may have actually hijacked the car or what. Could you sort of try to clarify that and how does this department respond to that issue?
Okay, so we know that carjacking issue kind of skyrocketed last year. So there's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, just like any crime, it's complex. But some of the reasons why we've seen spikes in carjackings is because of technology in terms of vehicle safety has skyrocketed. So now it's not as easy for them to go down a street block and hotwire cars like they used to do back in the day because there's a lot of technology out there. So a couple of the issues that we have with the carjackings is this. We know that over 60% of our carjackings are committed by juveniles. We also know that a lot of those juveniles are being directed by older people to commit these crimes because those older folks know that the juvenile consequence isn't as high as it is for an adult. So one of the things that State's Attorney Kim Fox did last year, at the end of last year, if you all remember, she used the RICO Act to prosecute a street gang. And that's where you can hold the person in charge of that gang responsible for what his underlings does. So we're going to do that more. We're also talking to our judicial partners and the State's Attorney's Office to see how we can better hold juveniles accountable for it. Because I recognize their minds aren't fully developed yet, but there still has to be a consequence if you're going to continue to commit that crime because we cannot send the message that you can commit this crime on Thursday, we arrest you on Friday, and then Saturday you're out just to commit the same type of crime again. We can't have that. But we've partnered with our federal partners, ATF, the FBI, as well as state and local partners, and we've created a task force. Now, we already had an internal task force, but now we've expanded it because we're seeing that communities surrounding Chicago are having the same issues. So now that we've created these task force, we are seeing a decline in them now. So the goal is to get them back down to where, I'm not going to say acceptable, but that it isn't the media sensation that it is right now. So we are addressing it, and we are seeing some progress with it.
Well, let's everybody give Superintendent Johnson a round of applause.